We got a lot to talk about with our good friend Mike Grimm on a Mike Grimm Monday, sports director at the Minnesota News Network, and of course, the voice of Golden Gopher Athletics. Twins sweep the White Sox and the Timberwolves. It's still a series. They even things up at two games apiece. We'll talk about those topics and much more. Mike, a good afternoon, and how are you doing on another bad weather day for a prep sports?
Yeah, when is spring going to get here? Are we just going to bounce right into summer here? It's like I'm looking, it was freezing rain and 33 degrees when I woke up this morning. So that's crazy. Yeah, brutal. Hopefully we start seeing some good weather. The Gophers have their spring game on Saturday. That forecast doesn't look very good either. And they moved it back with the hopes that it would be, better weather-wise. And it might be in the 50s, but it looks like it could be some rain, which you're always in fear of that. But I think when they moved it back, in addition to it being a good scheduling situation, I think they were hoping that you'd have a nice 65, 70 degree day for fans to come out and watch. But all that said, we're sitting here and it's low 30s in the middle of April here, late April.
Well, let's get right to that topic. Then we'll get to the Twins and the Timberwolves. Gopher spring practice game coming up this Saturday. So, Mike, you said there's a change in time. So those Gopher fans heading up from our area, what time is the game starting on Saturday?
Yeah, so the game will start at 1. And who knows? The forecast could change. It's still going to be in the 50s, so it's not going to be freezing or anything. It looks like there's possibility of some rain in the forecast. But it'll start at 1. I'm not sure if you guys will carry it. We are offering the broadcast on Saturday. If not, people can listen certainly on the apps and the available ways that way also. And it should be a good glimpse of what the football team has. There's going to be a few of the newcomers, playing. I talked to Chris Ottman-Bell and I forgot about it, but last year, the starters played just about the entire game, the spring game, because I was joking with him, like, you probably play about one play, and he said, I hope it's like last year. So we'll see what the plan is here for P.J. Fleck and the coaching staff to get guys in, but I think it's always fun, in spring football. Normally that game in the past had been, in the middle of April, and they pushed everything back a couple of weeks. I think just it fit the calendar better, and I do think there was a hope that the weather in late April be better than early to mid-April.
So Saturday, Gopher football. Tune into the apps like Mike mentioned. I think we have a Twins baseball coming up on Saturday, so we will not have that Gopher spring training game on Saturday. But if you go to the flagship station for the Gophers, are they going to have it?
Yeah, it'll be on that. And there's a really cool app called the Varsity Network app, which is a Learfield app. And I'd encourage everyone. I mean, I'm not trying to plug it. I make no money off any of this. But if you're a big college sports fan, especially, I would download that now, and then you'd have it for next season. And any Learfield broadcast. So that includes Minnesota. I think they have 11 of the 14 Big Ten schools. So that would include Wisconsin, Iowa. It would include Iowa State if there's Iowa State fans in your area. And it's the Varsity Network app. You can set it up. You can listen to any Learfield-produced broadcast. It's free. They had it this past year as well, but didn't heavily promote it because they wanted to make sure that they worked the bugs out, and there were a few bugs over the course of the year, and I think you'll hear more about it as next season starts. But it will be that spring broadcast will be on the Varsity Network app as well, and that's an app that if you're a college sports fan, you'll definitely want to download.
Mike Grimm on a Mike Grimm Monday here on Kate Radio, and talking about weather. It wasn't the nicest weather day for those that attended the Twins game yesterday. I was there on Saturday, and Mike, I think my record now watching the White Sox take on the Twins at Target Field is 1-15. I've seen the White Sox win one time, and the Twins have won 15, and I guess it did not matter which game I went to this weekend because the Twins get a big sweep, and just like that, the Minnesota Twins are in first place. Let's talk about yesterday, Byron Buxton showing that he is definitely going to be an MVP candidate, at least early. He could be one of the best players in the game. A couple of big homers, including a walk-off homer yesterday, and it was a slow start for the Minnesota Twins, but again, it's early, and just like that, it's the first place Twins.
Yeah, weird. They've gone from worst to first in a week. They were in last place last Monday, and they're in first place this Monday. But, the division's not great, so they're 8-8, and that puts them in first by a half game. But that's fine. I mean, you're not getting buried. They're playing, as we talked about, I think, last week. You're playing some teams that were playoff-caliber teams, early in this schedule. The Tigers feel like they're contenders, although their record is 6-9. They come tomorrow. But you know what's fun is, obviously everything, unfortunately, that we talk about with Buxton, we have to preface it with if he can stay healthy, if he can play 145 games. And if he can, there's no doubt he'll be an MVP candidate. We're not that far removed, Aaron, from, him striking out on just about every curveball that they threw to him and many of us saying, look, it's okay. But, like, he plays defense well enough. He only has to hit 220 to make his value. Well, he's still playing that great defense, and now he's hitting the ball, a long ways. I mean, this guy's got incredible power, incredible pop. I've said this a few times as an old cliche, and there's definite truth to it. You know, cliches are cliches because there's usually truth to it. I noticed it in person for the first time when I was covering the Cardinals, that when you're around the batting cage, it's one of my favorite things in the whole world to do would be get to that. When I was covering St. Louis, I'd get there early. Walk into the ballpark when the media gate opened at 3, go down and talk to, go through the clubhouse, talk to a couple guys, talk to La Russa, and then go out and watch the Cardinals hit around the batting cage. That's where you talk to people as well. But I just the feel of that, that's a sidebar. But I'd have my back to the cage, and I'd be talking, and I'd hear these, like, poof, poof, poof. Like, oh, Albert must be in the cage. And turn around and sure enough, you could just tell when Pujols was in there, just sounded a little different. And I heard Dick Bramer say that, I don't know if it was yesterday or if it was a couple of days ago on one of the Buxton hits. And he said, I can't remember now, but on the TV broadcast said, the ball just sounds different popping off his bat. And that think about a 5-tool player that runs and catches and throws the way he does. And now all of a sudden you mix in the offense to where the ball sounds a little different off his bat. And, yeah, that guy stays healthy. He's going to be an MVP candidate. There's no doubt about it. And the Twins, if he stays healthy, you're probably lucky they signed him to what I thought was a relatively friendly hometown deal, in this offseason to keep him in town for a while. I mean, if he stays healthy and produces, the Twins will be on the better end of that contract. But, man, what a treat it's been to watch. And on top of it, I think just the maturity level, and that's kind of the fun thing. Now I'm, I used to be a young guy. Now I'm an old guy, and I think I appreciate stuff more, now. And to watch how he conducts interviews, from when he was young. And look, he was like, 19 or 20 the first time, Twins media started interviewing him. Well, now he's emerged into he's a great talker. He's a great teammate. He's a good leader. It's just been fun to watch him, his whole game develop. And now, like I said, it really comes down to, man, if that kid can stay on the field for 145 games, 150 games, holy cow, sky's the limit.
Mike Grimm Monday, and you brought up Tony La Russa, again, the former Cardinals coach. He was the White Sox coach. Now he's back with my White Sox, and I know Chicago media is having a heyday with him because the White Sox have lost 7 in a row, and especially with a base open. I'm yelling at my TV yesterday, why are you pitching to Buxton? There's a base open, and La Russa said, he thought that the guy on deck, I forget if that was Arise, maybe that was up after him, that he was swinging just as good a bat. There's no way you pitch to Buxton in that situation. I don't care what your analytics say. I thought that was just a bad, bad move by the White Sox skipper.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I think you can pitch to him, but don't give him much to hit out of the ballpark. Like, the pitch that he hit was high at top of the strike zone, and Hendricks throws 98. And so my hunch is that Hendricks figured, well, if I throw the pitch there, it's probably going to be ball 4. And better yet, if he swings at it, it's probably going to be a swing and a miss or a pop-up. And he probably wanted to get that pitch about 2 or 3 inches higher, because then that's probably what happens. But he left it in the top of the zone just enough, like just by an inch, that Buxton's hands are so good. He got the bat to it, and, a high fastball going in at 98, when you hit it all and you've got, the strength that he does, it's going out even faster. So it, I don't mind it. But the thing is, when you do it, and you're like, we're going to pitch around him and try to get himself out, you leave yourself in this level of baseball. If you make a 2 or 3 inch mistake, like Hendricks probably did there, like I said, he probably wanted that pitch 3 inches higher. You know, that's the difference between a swing and a miss and a ball that lands literally 467 feet away from you. It was, I saw in a article this morning that's the longest walk-off home run since, the StatCast deal, you know, that they measure the exit velocity and length and all that stuff. 467 foot homer, longest homer in the StatCast or GameCast or whatever it's called era. Of all the walk-off homers, that's the longest one. And that's the difference between a swing and a miss and a strikeout. So what you do in terms of walking him there is you eliminate the chance for mistake. And the other thing is you can tell a pitcher, the pitch around him, and I know Liam Hendricks enough, you know, having been around and watched him and, you know, he was here for a while in Minnesota, that I don't care. You tell that guy, hey, pitch around it. There's some guys in this league that are so competitive, and I believe he's one of them. He might just say, you know, flip the middle finger figuratively to the manager and say, you don't think I can get him out? Watch this. Yep. And try, honestly. And so you would eliminate that if the manager just holds up four fingers and puts a guy on base. Now, that said, Arise may have, you know, plopped one into right center field for a base hit. The game was over. But I think you can live with that a little bit better.
Mike Grimm Monday here on Kate Radio. Let's talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves. If you stayed up late on Saturday night, the T-Wolves, they win to even the series at 2 games apiece. After the game was over, Mike, my son Isaac looks at me and he says, Wolves in 6. I go, I sure hope so. I go, that would be great. Now, one thing I've been reading a lot about, or seeing, I should say, tweets, a lot of Timberwolves fans, they're happy with the win, but they're saying, well, Minnesota should have been up 3-1 after blowing that huge lead in game number 3. My argument is, if they win game 3, game 4 might look a lot different because Memphis has got their backs against the wall. Karl-Anthony Towns maybe doesn't come out with a chip on his shoulder and play the way he did in game 4. So I do not think that you can assume for a second that this series would be 3-1 if the Timberwolves would have not blown that Game 3 lead. And you're the 7th seed. Memphis is a 2 seed. It's a 2-2 series after 4 games. If you would have told me at the beginning of this best-of-7, Mike, that it'd be tied at 2, I'd take it.
No question. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the Wolves, to me, I think have, if you were going to split it up each minute, like which team played better this minute, I don't think there's any doubt the Wolves have had more good minutes than Memphis has in the series. So, that's the good news part of it. And you're right. I 100% agree with you on the, you know, the that's the beauty of the 7-game series, you know, that it ebbs and flows. And, you know, people can say, well, you know, the emotion should always be the same going in, no matter the outcome. Well, no, that's the series takes on a life of its own. And the outcome of one game, 100% has a you know, an influence on the remaining games of the series. There's no doubt about that. So I agree with that. That said, I mean, that's a game you just can't let get away from you. That was incredible. I couldn't believe what I was watching. And I'll say two things on that game real quick. One, to me, I saw everyone talking and about, you know, treating that as if they blew a 26-point lead. And to me, that's not the most incredible thing about it. Like, if you like over the course of the season, I'll bet you there's at least one 20-point lead blown a week in the NBA, and at least one 25-point lead blown a month. So it's not like it's never happened. And even in the playoffs, I saw they flashed up. I think a team had blown a 25-point lead like, I don't know, was it 7 or 8 times in over the years. So it's not, it's uncommon, but it's not like, hey, this has never happened in the history of basketball. To me, the most amazing part of the whole thing was, and it wasn't really written this way. Everyone said they blew a 26-point lead. They, in essence, blew 2 25-point leads, right? They held a 26-point lead in the first half, and that lead, now they didn't blow the lead, but that thing got cut to, what was it, 7 at halftime, and then early in the third it was down to 3. So, in essence, they blew that lead. Then they built the lead back up to 25, and then they blew that lead. Like, that, I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen anybody write about that or try to look that up. When's the last time, you know, a team in the NBA, let alone playoffs, but just period, has blown two separate, not like, hey, they blew a 26-point lead, they were ahead, you know, in the first half and ended up blowing it. That happens a lot in the NBA. But this was a deal where you twice as a team build up a 25-point lead and blew them both. That was, to me, that's an incredible thing. But that said, I am not surprised that the Wolves bounce back. I mean, you're dealing with similar teams here that neither has really had, you know, any playoff experience. Neither has had any playoff success. And we all live in our own world. So, you know, the second that the Wolves blew those two leads and lost the game, everyone's like, well, this series is over. This is over. And I remember, you know, telling a coworker, my buddy Justin Gard and I were talking just in the hallway, and I said, look, man, I wouldn't be surprised if the Wolves came out and won the next game. And he's like, you're crazy. I'm like, no, I mean, you know, the Grizzlies haven't had any experience handling success like this, you know, and the Wolves won are good. They've outplayed them. I mean, the good news is they twice built a 25-point lead on a team that I honestly haven't been that impressed with Memphis in this series for the two seed, right? They've been fine, but nothing, you know, this doesn't seem to be the normal 2-7 series to me. So, yeah, the Wolves are absolutely right in it. And, boy, if they could go obviously get this one tomorrow night, they're in the catbird seat, so to speak.
Wolves in six. Say it with me, Mike. Wolves in six. Let's go with that.
I'll take it. No doubt, I'll take it.
Now, Mike, before I let you go, I know it's a big weekend for the NFL. The NFL draft, I believe, starts on Thursday. I don't really get into the NFL draft. I don't watch enough college football to be even close to any kind of expert on who should take who at one spot. Minnesota is picking number 12 on Thursday. We'll see if they stay in that spot or not. When it comes to following the NFL draft, how close do you follow it?
Peripherally. I mean, I know they picked 12. I know that, you know, there's a need at secondary. There's a need at edge rusher. And if there's some stud receiver hanging there, they might take that guy. I know that apparently there's a lot of receivers in this draft. But that's about it. I don't get into it. I don't even know who the first pick. Usually by now we know who the first pick is. And if we do, I haven't seen that or know. But it's a little like, you know, for me, you know, my livelihood is, you know, college athletics, as you know, in terms of my everyday gig. And it's like recruiting to me. I follow it some. I know it's the most important thing a college coach can do, quite literally, in terms of what outcome, you know, win or lose. You got to assemble a talented team. The more talent you got, the better chance you got to win. That's just you know, a one-to-one correlation. I just don't have the brain power to devote to it, and especially now with the portal and the transfers and the name, image, and likeness, it's just, you know, you got guys committing and then 2 months later decommitting. You got guys who are on the team leave. So I think it's a healthy skill, quite frankly. I've been able to compartmentalize, and I don't worry 1 minute. I mean, I know it's important, but I'm not saying, hey, don't worry about recruiting. I don't care about it because it's not my deal. Like, the Gophers are going to show up and play a game on Thursday, September 1st against New Mexico State. And my main worry is figuring out what, you know, guys are on the roster for that night, not who might be on the roster a year from now. So I'm a little bit like you. Plus, you know, everyone throws out these grades, and I think most of that stuff's been debunked in terms of, oh, well, this guy went too early and this guy went too late. And at the end of the day, nobody really knows. It's just based on grades that are meaningless at this point, in terms of recruiting or draft grades. You know, guys that have been highly rated have flopped, and guys that, you know, haven't even been drafted, like an Adam Thielen, have flourished. So I'm with you a little bit that way. But I do think, you know, edge rush, defensive back, specifically a cornerback, I think those are probably, it sounds like, the two top needs for the Vikings. I'm always good for a good reality TV show with live suspense involving human drama. And to see those young kids and their lives turn around or change in one phone call is kind of cool. I hope ESPN comes off. I noticed last year during the pandemic, or maybe it was the year before, it was like they must have sent out a questionnaire and asked, what's the worst moment of your life? Because it was like every single guy that drafted, it was like, you know, defensive tackle from Texas Tech. This guy's unbelievable. He's 6'4", he's 309, he had 7 sacks, and his grandmother got hit by a bus when he was 9 years old.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? We don't. I mean, fine, tell that story at some point, but I don't know on draft night if we need to, you know, or it's like, you know, this guy's a defensive end from Alabama with 19 sacks, and he won the Bignarik Award, and he's from, you know, Atlanta, Georgia, and, you know, when he was 6 years old, his, you know, his brother was diagnosed with cancer, and then they start playing, so it's like, whoa, let's just, and I get it, everyone has to overcome stuff, and at some point that story can be told, but I don't know if those are great draft night stories, so hopefully they get into, but I do like the human drama of it. I do like those kids and the joy, and, you know, they get that phone call, and we find out about them. I do enjoy that part of it. I really do.
Now, Mike, one real quick question, speaking of the NFL draft, before we let you go. When it comes to a Golden Gophers that could hear their name this weekend, who are some of those guys?
Yeah, so there's definitely a top two. Daniel Fa'alele, the starter at right tackle, basically, for the last four seasons. Well, three of the last four. He sat out the COVID year. But it sounds like he's projected to go anywhere from the late first round, maybe, you know, likely in the second. It could, you know, depending on what teams think, because, you know, he's kind of an experiment, quite frankly. No one's ever been this big with this set of skills. And so because he's big, that could scare some teams off. But yet because he's big and skilled is likely the reason he's talked about as a potential first rounder. So that will be interesting to see if his name gets called. And then Boye Mafe is another kind of freakish athlete who, when you just look at his production, if you just look at the stats, he was good but not great. I mean, he was absolutely an impact for the Gophers and certainly their best defensive end the last 2 years. But it wasn't like he, you know, had 11 sacks in 12 games. You know, he was a single-digit kind of sack guy. But it's weird now how fast the Big Ten passing game is with quick releases. I mean, I think the leader in sacks in the Big Ten last year had like 8. You know, that was it. So it's not like, you know, in the old days, you know, where guys would put up 15 sacks in a 12-game season. So his numbers don't pop off, but in terms of stats, but his football skill set numbers, you know, the 40, the vertical jump, the shuttle, and all that stuff, it's one of the best in relative terms for any defensive end in the draft in like the last 20 years. So he could potentially be a late first as well. Maybe a second. Could he trickle into the third? Possibly. But those are the two guys that I would say, you know, we'll hear their name, if not Thursday, certainly Friday. And then Friday, Saturday guys would be Blaze Andres, the offensive lineman from Marshall. The teams really like him. He's been durable. He's versatile. He hasn't missed any games or many. A smart kid. No question, did well in the interviews. You know, and then, you know, there's a few other guys that, you know, that may or may not hear their name called. Sam Schluter, offensive lineman. I'm just trying to think. Jack Gibbons, a linebacker, probably not going to get drafted, but definitely has a chance to make his mark in training camp and potentially, you know, have a shot. Coney Durr is another. I'm sure I'm forgetting some guys. I don't have the roster in front of me, but that'll give people a little taste of what they can expect from a Minnesota standpoint, Gopher standpoint, that is, this weekend.
Coming up next Monday, we'll recap the draft with Mike Grimm. We'll see if the Twins are still in first place, and the Timberwolf series will be over. Hopefully the T-Wolves are moving on to the second round. Mike Grimm, the voice of Golden Gopher Athletics, and of course, sports director, Minnesota News Network. Mike, thank you so much for the time. Have a great week. Again, Wolves in six, and we'll talk Monday.
Let's do it. Wolves in six. I'm on board. And I'm also on board with the Twins staying in first. So that'd be good. Let's chat next week.